Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Pat Prince. Welcome to the Goldmine Podcast. I'm here, my closest friend in the world, Tony Truglio, who I grew up with. Since I've known you since I was 15, right? I think somewhere
maybe even younger, possibly younger. Yeah.
He is the guitarist still in Liege Lord. Liege Lord is still going strong. I wanted this episode to be an in memoriam to our closest friend Matt Vincey, who passed away in September, and I wanted to do this in memoriam podcast to talk about how brilliant Matt was as a songwriter, not only a great bassist, but a magnificent songwriter. And also, I mean, he had so many different great qualities as an artist.
The true definition of an artist.
A renaissance, right? A renaissance.
Totally.
But I mean, you guys started this band, what, 1983, maybe? Even 82, maybe?
I think, probably 82, because I met Matt in 80. I think in 1980 is when Frank met Matt.
Yeah, drummer. And then,
you know, like I would go, you know, Frank was playing with Matt and another friend, Dave Pashain. And I would go to the rehearsals and I just always wanted to be in a band. And, you know, I'd sit there and just like, part of me was like, I wish I was in this band, but I don't think I was good enough in eighth grade to do that, you know?
I remember you playing baseball and making the transition from an athlete to a musician.
Baseball and music came a little more natural to me than other things, you know?
Right. But you were good right away, and so was Matt. I
don't think so. I think, you know, I remember playing with some of our other friends when I was in eighth grade still. And I don't think I was at that level. I was behind, you know, and them kind of like making me feel like I wasn't good enough sent me back practicing. And that was like, you know, it was like, wow, these guys don't like, I got to get to that level. And I went home, just started practicing 3-4 hours a day, you know?
But you still seem like you had a natural inclination to play. And so did Matt. I mean, Matt just seemed to, he played without a pick. I used his fingers, probably like, which I think he got from, probably influenced by Steve Harris.
Before that.
Geddy Lee.
Jack Bruce, Geddy Lee.
Jack Bruce, right.
John Paul Jones.
Right.
You know, I remember watching the three of those guys play, being in the back of his basement and just wishing I could play with Matt. I just fell in love with the way he played, his sense of humor, you know, and that it took a little while. They disbanded and I was on Matt all the time. to do a metal band. And at first he was hesitant, like he just didn't want to be in a band.
But just think about it. Not many people have friends since they were in, you know, freshman in high school. And you guys didn't even go to the same school as me, but we hung out and with the same crowd, which we were probably only rock and roll, heavy metal kids around, maybe.
Metal was taboo. Connecticut. You know?
Long hair was taboo, right?
Taboo, you know. But we had our own little club. We had our own clique, you know?
Right, that's true. And he started, I mean, Matt was creative early on with animation, drawing, illustration, and I think he wrote songs from an early, early on. Now, he was, at first, I remember he was telling me he went to go see Cheap Trick and Styx, and, you know, he was a gradual evolution of, you know, those bands that you first turned on to, and then Led Zeppelin, and then eventually Iron Maiden, Judas Priest.
Cream was something Matt and I fell in love with. You know, I think Jack Bruce played a big influence on him before he'd even heard Iron Maiden. And obviously, Geddy Lee, he loved Rush, and we all loved the same music. We all loved, like, all that classic rock stuff, Jimi Hendrix, Cream, Zeppelin. You know, I wasn't big into the Doors until later because it was more keyboard heavy, but Matt loved all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I remember that's what made me switch to bass. In fact, I played guitar. Les Paul, the neck was too thick for me, so Matt was like, try the bass, and he actually turned me on to Rush, and after I heard Geddy Lee, I was like, man, this is the instrument I need to play.
Huge influence on all of us, you know, like Rush was an important band for us.
And then you heard Steve Harris, he was like a soloist in a heavy metal band, and the heavy metal we were into is not like what's heavy metal today. I mean, it's totally different, really.
It was heavier, but there's like the early Priest stuff that we got into is more like hard rock, you know?
Yeah,
like
it had more depth, I think. Maybe darker subject matter and had more depth.
Rob's voice on Sad Wings of Destiny, like he was just like such an amazing singer, you know.
If you read the lyrics to Sad Wings and some of the early stuff, that's where I think Matt got influenced. You could read Matt's lyrics and they very much sound like something that Halford would sing. I mean,
I would agree with that.
The Island of Domination, all this, you know, genocide, tyrant, you know, stories about historical human, basically human history, you know, whether it was warfare or medieval times, or Matt read a lot. So his lyrics, and the thing I loved about his lyrics, stayed intelligent. They never got goofy. You know, they were in that sort of early Judas Priest vein.
100%.
Yeah.
I'd have to read him like 3, 4, 5 times to,
right,
you know, get the point. And, you know, I wrote the first Liege Lord song, lyrics and music. And that was it, because we had a little accident in the studio. I don't know if you remember that.
No.
I forgot the name of the song, but I wrote No Comfort for My Pain, and Andy Michaud sang No Comfort for My Pear, like, you know, an actual pear. Right. Eating a pear, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm never writing lyrics again.
I don't remember that story. Oh,
and that's how the song came out. It was on our first demo tape with the cover songs to get gigs back then.
The first demo tape was fantastic. Metal Forces gave it like 5 stars.
That was the second tape, because we made, in high school, we made a tape to get gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
Flight of Icarus, maybe Metal Gods, and the one original that we did.
Right. But your first demo tape was all originals. You had sent it to Metal Forces, and Dave Reynolds, the guy who reviewed it for Metal Forces, we were friends with him. I don't know what happened to Dave, but
he never resurfaced, but he pushed us, and
he did. He promoted the band a lot.
Helped us, and you know, little whatever success we had was thank you know, I would thank him and a couple other writers too. You know,
right. Now Matt dropped out of metal for about 10 years to
more than that.
Photography, yeah, maybe 20, right?
Yeah.
I remember having a talk with him and told him he was thinking about doing it again. And I said, you got to embrace it, man. You know, you got to embrace what you've accomplished. Cause you guys accomplished a lot, man, from an early age. And the thing is that like Connecticut, we grew up in Connecticut and there was no real music scene. I think that didn't work in anyone's favor, right?
No, it was, like I said before, it was taboo. People looked at us like, you know, thugs with long hair, and music was, it wasn't accepted. It was too heavy. It was
right. You know, if you had grown up in New York City, you know, it would have been a different story. If you had, especially if you had grown up in Britain, you know, that would have been, you know, the new wave of British heavy metal was still going strong during that time. So,
we were caught in this. We weren't like Dokken, but we weren't like thrash. We were,
right.
You know,
power metal.
I like to think power metal, or I like to think of it like Iron Maiden, Priest on steroids, like early.
Yeah, it was too heavy for the Dokken crowd, but it was too melodic for the thrash crowd.
Correct.
But still, that's what made it great. It had both elements of Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. You know, people hopefully are still being turned on to it. I know that the band is immensely popular in Europe, especially Greece and Germany.
You know, in our niche market, you know, in that market. And there are a lot of people that like the 80s style. They're not, you know, I played in Helmet. And when I mentioned that, people don't even know who Helmet is. And Helmet gained a lot of
success. Wow. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Meantime was a huge album. So I want to, you know, I want to talk about Matt's songwriting brilliance. You know, I mean, let's talk about four songs. You pick them that you think were the best songs that Matt's lyrics, and then you wrote, you know, the music together. And sometimes you wrote the music.
Matt and I had this bond with,
right.
Like, even when he wrote something by himself, bass riff, he'd always come to me and I would put the guitar that I saw fit. And, you know, I always relied on him to tell me my stuff was cool. And I didn't find this out till years later. He's like, I never changed. I just kind of liked it and left it. And I thought, you know, like, I always relied on his, you know, like, you have to tell me this is cool. Do I need to change it? And he never did. And then years later, he's like, I just liked it from the get-go. And, you know, we had a really, really cool music thing going on, you know. He would give me, speaking of his artistry, he would give me you know, in the 80s, a Radio Shack recorder cassette of his bass riff and he put it in a jacket and he would draw his cartoon characters on it. There was always some type of humor involved,
right?
And I would come home and listen to it, and I would just try and be as creative as I can, because, you know, when a bass player writes, you have to, I didn't want to just put power chords, and, you know, I wanted other things. And I always tried to do that with this stuff. And we just clicked, man. We had like
natural,
we just were comfortable with it.
And one of the first songs I think you wrote was Wielding Iron Fist, right? Which is about lyrically about a medieval warfare. And it's very, like I said, the lyrics are very intelligent, and it's not stupid crap. It's like someone who would, you know, if you were doing a report on medieval history, you might write these sort of lyrics. What is that? That's one of the first songs, right? Or was it?
No, Dark, that's the first song. It was on the demo, and then it's on Freedom's Rise. So Matt wrote the intro, Prodigy. I put the guitars and the harmonies to it, and then right out of that, I'm like, I was inspired to write Wielding Iron Fists. I gave Matt my guitar parts, and he wrote those great lyrics, and I still love playing that. I think it's a unique song. The chorus is different. I think a lot of our stuff is not your typical metal stuff. It moves, it dances around.
Then you have Dark Tale, which is kind of, it's still in that sort of medieval vein, but it has really nice stops and like pauses, and talk about time changes, has a nice tempo. And that's one of the songs Dave Reynolds from Metal Forces picked as a very unique song.
I think that's our first injection of a little bit of thrash into our music. You know?
You think so?
I think so. I think it has a little bit of just the way it starts. It's, you know, because I always liked that stuff. Matt eventually also, you know, I still love Slayer. I always liked a lot of the heavy stuff, you know, and I think that had a little of a vibe going on where we started injecting a little bit of heavier stuff into our music.
Rising higher, it crests the sky.
had lost interest in music is that metal got kind of dumbed down with hair metal, and then it got totally out of control with who could be the heaviest.
Right.
And it got ridiculous. People were going for one extreme or the other. And it's kind of like how I kind of dropped out of the scene too. We all do to some extent, right? I mean, I know Matt and you too, we went back to stuff that we liked earlier in our childhood. We listened to jazz, we listened to classical. I listen to all types of stuff, and I know you do too.
I constantly practice jazz. That's how I get better on guitar, you know?
But at the time, what pissed me off about the metal scene is that, and there's still people like that, they could only listen to heavy metal. That was it. And it was just ridiculous to be that way, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that Matt hate it, because he was a creative guy, man. He wanted all sorts of creative things to come in to play so that can inspire him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember when we went to a Man of War concert, he was like, what the hell, because they were just trying to play the loudest they could play, and it was just it wasn't
his thing. And I liked a lot of their stuff. They're super talented. Yeah.
Musician. Oh, the singer's really talented.
But it wasn't his thing. And, you know, like...
He didn't like showing off. He didn't like the, you know, the Malmsteen type, you know.
And the loincloths. It was like...
Early on, we wore,
in all the bands, Metallica, Slayer, we wore what Priest and Maiden were wearing.
Yeah, leather jackets. Right.
And then we grew out of it, and he was just not into that. You know, he just wanted to play music regardless of what you like, you know. Same thing with Helmet. They're a heavy band that dressed t-shirts, jeans, shorts, and, you know, like, that's what we became, you know.
Right. And then it's we move on to Burn in My Touch, which is the second album, right? And that album was really like stuff, there was a lot of stuff left over from Freedom's Rise, right? Some songs. Was Transgressor one of them? That's, as I told you, that was one of my favorite Matt.
It wasn't left over. It was something I wrote after Freedom's Rise, and I brought it to Matt. I thought, I still think, you know, we play that live still. And, you know, now we have Joe singing it, and it, I mean, like, it's so heavy live. I'd love to play that. We just played it in Texas at this Hell's Heroes, which I wanted Matt to come to so bad, because it's one of the biggest shows we'd ever played, you know?
Right.
There's a lot of, like, different changes in there. It's tricky to play.
And it was Andy Michaud's last album. And I get, you know, I love Andy Michaud's voice, man. I still do. And I love Joe Comeau's voice. Two different type of singers. Joe is more in the sort of Dickinson.
Not anymore. I think he we're working on, well, we basically have one song to finish. And Joe's,
he's, I mean, a little more soulful, maybe is the right word. I don't know.
I almost hear him more like Rob now than
really
Dickinson. Yeah. I mean, and his own thing, like all the demos we're doing, he's found his own niche, you know?
Right. Yeah. He's evolved, and I know you guys are still writing songs, and that was one thing I wish Matt was part of that for.
He's got two songs on this album, you know, that we're trying to finish and make it perfect. And, you know, I work with Danny, and he's on my mind. Like, I have to think like Matt. Would Matt like this? You know, so that's kind of what we're doing. We have one more to kind of finish.
So as you move to 1988, you record Master Control, you have Joe as a, I'm trying to think, did you, okay, Paul Nelson came in the band during Burn of My Touch, right?
Correct.
Okay, and Pete McCarthy was one album? Yeah, one album.
He left after Freedom to Rise.
Both really good guitarists. So anyway, Master Control, what's your favorite Matt song on that record?
I love Rapture, but I think the best Liege Lord song is Master Control. That's my favorite.
Right.
And that's Matt and I working together at our best.
Control. Master Control. Now retaliation. We are face to face. I
Were you guys trying to write differently, or was it still that same natural feeling? You just came to each other and started writing.
I think that album's a little heavier, faster.
Yeah.
Just a natural progression.
Better production.
A little better. Yeah. You know, I listen to it nowadays, and we did the best we could with what little money we had, you know?
Was that Terry Date producer?
That is Terry. Terry was referred to us by David Wayne from Metal Church. Joe Bouchard from Cloister Cult did the second album.
Oh, right.
Terry did Pantera. Right? Like, if you look at his resume, it's insane.
Who did the first album, Freedom's Rise? Who produced that?
No one. Austin, the engineer.
Right. That's what I think. I can't remember who was in there. Yeah, Terry Date did a great job, I thought.
Much better. He taught us a lot, but, you know, we only had so much money.
Right.
So, you know, when you're rushing, sometimes you got to make compromises and you got to settle.
Right. So that's where it's sort of, I think that might be the best song that Matt and you guys collaborated on, Master Control. It just has all the, it's catchy, it's heavy, it's has all the right elements.
Seems to be like the fan favorite, you know?
Right. And it's produced really well. It sounds great. Joe Camo sounds great on it. So tell me, something's coming out, right? A box set, or is it already out?
No, they just reissued the vinyl. Metal Blade owns Burn of My Touch and Master Control, and they just reissued it. You know, they wanted to license, or, you know, like Freedom's Rise from us, but couldn't get everyone to sign it. You know, like they wanted every member's signature. It just took too long, so they just put it up, you know.
So it's two albums that they...
Correct, that they own. So they right. can do whatever they want with it.
Right. Well, Freedom's Rise would... It'd be interesting to hear what Freedom's Rise sounded like with Joe Camo singing.
Well, you know, we played a few of those songs. We've done, I don't know if we've done Legionnaire, but obviously Prodigy, Wielding Iron Fist, Dark Tale, Rage of Angels. He sounds great. I love when Joe sings those songs.
You ever think about putting out a live album? Did you and Matt ever discuss that?
What I wanted to do is re-record some of the, you know, those songs. I mean, we own Freedom's Rise, but even Burn of My Touch, if we re-record them with Joe, we would own those songs. You know, but it's just we're all scattered. You know, Danny's in Jersey, Joe's in Florida, Matt was in Stratford. When we made those albums, we all lived in the same town. It was easy to get together.
Right. He was very proud of this new work, though. I remember him telling me how he really liked the new songs, saying, you know, wait till you hear them. Because I still like traditional metal, and you guys fall in that category.
Well, that's what this stuff is like. This stuff is, it could have come out in like 1990 if we put another album out.
I mean, you put on classic rock stations and you hear Metallica, Judas Priest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Well, they have to play Metallica. They're selling out stadiums. You know, they got
right.
to where no one would play them. And now it's cool to like Metallica.
Well, side note, you and I saw them in a club on New Year's Eve where there were like six people.
I mean,
1983.
We've seen, you know.
Yeah. I tell people that and I think I'm lying, but yeah.
When I probably still have those tickets. I've never thrown any of the tickets of all those shows we went to.
Oh, those could sell on eBay.
Well, they're mine to keep. I'm not getting
Well, Matt was with us at that show too. But I wanted to do a podcast because our love for Matt and how much he meant to us as a friend and a creative force. And I thought it'd be great if I had you on and you could pick four songs that you and him, you know, created, you know, together. So I thought this was a great thing to do.
Yeah. It's these a nice songs tribute that Matt also, when we put the band back together, we looked at other songs and those are songs he wanted to do. I'm like, you know.
Right. You know. He wants the band to continue. I know that. I hope this album comes out soon. I want to hear it.
I think it'll come out next year sometime. You know, and I have to make it
Tribute to Matt Vincey.
Yeah, I have to make it really good because, you know, the thought of never looking over and seeing him to my left, it's heartbreaking. You know, it's just heartbreaking to lose. You know, we grew up like brothers. We've been friends, three of us. And, you know, I'll miss him dearly. I've had to play some shows without him. And Will, who filled in, is fantastic. But Matt was, he's like a brother to me. He was, I loved him dearly. And his family took me in when I met Matt. And my family took him in.
I know. Well, we love you, Matt. And keep on Matt's spirit. Keep his spirit alive by continuing Liege Lord, man. Keep his creative spirit, that songwriting spirit alive. And thanks, Tone, for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk soon, okay?
Definitely, Pat. Thank you for having me.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.